The above equation clearly reveals that the market price per share is the sum of the present value of two sources of income, the present value of infinite stream of constant dividends and the present value of infinite streams of firm's earning. As per Walter's model, when the rate of return is greater than the cost of capital, the price per share increases and dividend payout ratio decreases. When the rate of return is equal to the cost of capital, the share price decreases and the dividend payout ratio increases. The price per share remains constant and does not change with dividend payout ratio. When the rate of return is lesser than the cost of capital, then the price of share goes down. These implications lead us to conclude that the optimal payout ratio for growth firm is nil, the optimal payout ratio for normal firm is irrelevant, and the optimal payout ratio for declining firm is 100%. It is clear that these guidelines by Walter's model require us to follow a course of action that is impractical. The model succeeds only to explain the effects of dividend policy under different degrees of earning. The model is useful to show the effects of dividend policy on all equity firm under different assumptions about its rate of return. However, the simplified nature of the model can lead to conclusions which are not true in general, though true for model Walter's model under its assumption. The second very popular model explicitly relating to market value of the firm to dividend policy is developed by Myron Gordon. Gordon's model is based on following assumptions. 1. The firm is an all equity firm. 2. No external financing is available. Retained earning represent the only source of financing for the firm. Thus, like Walter model, Gordon model ties investment decision and dividend decisions together. The third is internal rate of return of the firm on its investment is constant. 4. The appropriate discount rate of the firm remains constant and is greater than the growth rate. 5. The firm and its stream of earnings are perpetual. 6. Corporate taxes do not exist. 7. The retention ratio, once decided upon, is constant. Thus, the growth rate is constant forever. 8. If this condition is not fulfilled, we cannot get a meaningful value of the share. According to Gordon's dividend capitalization model, the market value of a share, which is PO, is equal to the present value of the infinite streams of dividends to be received by the share. Gordon uses the following equation to state how the market price of a firm share is determined. So you have PO is equal to E1 into 1 minus B divided by K minus BR, where PO is the price of share at the end of the year 0. E1 is the earning per share at the end of the year 1. B is the fraction of earning the firm retains for investment. 1 minus B is the fraction of earnings the firm distributed as a dividend. K is the rate of return required by the shareholders. And R is the rate of return on investment arranged from retained earnings. This model professes that what matter is not the actual dividend amount, but the difference between what was expected to happen. So this is where the Gordon model formula looks like. There is one more for a model called the rational expectation model. The rational expectation model professes that what matter is not the actual dividend amount, but the difference between what is was expected to happen and the actual event. This was explained by John F. Muth in his paper entitled Rational Expectation and the Theory of Price Movement. It states the relationship between the dividends and the price of script on the market operates as under. If the company announces a dividend that is equal to the market expectation, then there will be no change in the price of the share after the dividend announcement. So the investors are expecting 20 rupee from a company XL Limited. XL declares a dividend of 15 rupees against 12 of last year. The share price will go down in the market as per the rational expectations model. However, if the investor are expecting 20 rupees, they declare a dividend of 25, the share price will go up in the market. So it must be noted here, the absolute amount of dividend is not material. It could also be less than what was declared in earlier year. But since the lower dividend was expected by shareholders, it is already built in the share price ruling prior to dividend declaration. If the dividend declared is higher than the market expectation, then the investors start revising their estimates of the firm's future earnings. This upward revision to future earning initiates upward movement in the firm's share price. So as an example, last year 10 rupees were given as dividend. This year everything has got 12 rupees. Expected this year in the first case was 15 rupees, the share prices will go down. The expected this year is 12 rupees and you have given 12 rupees, no change in the share price. And expectation this year was 10 rupees but you have given 12 rupees, therefore the share prices go up. As per rational expectation model theory, unexpected dividend declarations convey messages about the firm's future earning that were not built in by the ruling market price of shares earlier and therefore causes change in the share price. Thus, on one hand, we have academicians who proclaim the share prices are independent of dividend decisions and practical thinkers who prove that the dividends do influence the market price of the shares. Now, a few considerations. Share values are influenced by business entities' dividend decision. The CFO therefore has to devise a dividend policy that optimizes the price of the stock on the stock exchange. The decision of net earnings between reinvestment and dividends should be such that the potential investors are attracted to purchase shares and thus sustain shares at a higher prices. Regardless of fluctuation in the business entity's earning, its dividend record needs to indicate continuity and stability. Dividend payout ratio has to be consistent and dividend should be increased when there is a strong indication that earnings are healthy and sustainable. Stockholders' preference have to be considered in devising an optimal dividend policy and appropriate weightage needs to be provided to their need for current dividend income. At the same time, if the business entity is on a growth path and the funds are required for business investment, a residual dividend policy may be right dividend decision. Before finalizing company's dividend policy, it is necessary for CFO to consider various factors like general state of economy, state of market, capital market, legal and contractual requirements, existing corporate tax structure, etc. You will observe that all these factors are external factors. In addition, there are internal factors also which he needs to be considered, and how that impacts the company's dividend policy. We will look at each one of them individually going forward. So the first factor, which is an external factor, is the state of economy. As it is explained earlier, while considering a dividend decision prudently, the CFO, in addition to the earnings available, has to consider future flow of earnings to maintain stability. The level of business activity and earnings are significantly dependent on the general state of the economy. Strong positive economic indicators prompt the CFO to allocate large part of earnings per dividend. On the other hand, bleak signals for economic growth or a higher degree of uncertainty compel the CFO to be defensive and preserve the earnings to be ready to face the financial hurdles, if any. If the management anticipates above average inflation, then it needs to preserve the fund as they are necessary when the present assets are to be replaced at the higher prices. Existing funds available from depreciation can take care of the original value of assets to be replaced. But the balance funds required to take care of increased price of the assets have to be sourced from the retained earnings. In such inflationary condition, it is prudent to restrict dividend. Another external factor is the capital markets. The availability of fund also influences dividend decisions. If the funds available at a fair price, the CFO is inclined to be generous in allocating surplus earnings for dividends, thereby getting more confidence of the investors. However, in the tight capital markets where the funds are not easily available or they carry a high interest cost, the CFO, by restricting the dividend payout ratio, tries to preserve the internal funds for use whenever required. These plowed back funds are there at an economic rate compared to the debt funds, which are high in the tough capital market scenario. Another external factor which has to be considered before a dividend policy is framed is the legal constraints. Now, the company law earlier had imposed upon a management certain percentage of retained earning that must be transferred to general reserves. Amounts to be transferred increased with the rise in the rate of dividends. Of course, in 2013 these provisions were withdrawn, and now it is left to the management to decide which part of earning to transfer to reserve and what part to be utilized for dividend distribution. However, if the dividends are to be declared from previous year's earnings, then it is mandatory that the provisions of company's declaration and payment of dividend rules under 2014 are fully complied with. These call for maintenance of minimum reserves in relation to the paid up capital, providing for accumulated depreciation or losses, if any. Another external factor to be considered is the corporate tax structure. Today, dividend earnings at the hands of the shareholders are tax free. Now, this move is expected to attract into share market and thus contribute to the growth of the organized sector. The company though has to pay a dividend distribution tax. But in countries where such exemption does not exist, the CFO has to consider the shareholders' preference in restricting their share tax burdens. Shareholders in the upper income bracket, instead of paying tax on dividend income, prefer capital gains which arises from rise of share price, which are subject to lesser income tax rates. Now we look at the internal factors which decides the dividend policy. Of course, the first one is the firm's need of funds. Accrued earnings of a business entity are to be utilized for reinvestment to ensure business growth and for dividend distribution to satisfy firm's investors. Each dividend policy has to weigh the need for funds to finance many projects to be implemented to increase and sustain the business of the company. Whether shareholders prefer long-term gains instead of a current income, and the company has many profitable projects with high rate of return, the development of dividend policy is a straight affair. Similarly, with mature companies, usually need funds for reinvestment is minimal, as there are few project opportunities that can yield competitive rate of return. Here, if the stockholders are keen to receive current income in the form of dividends, most of the earnings can be used for dividend distribution and balance left to finance few projects. Formulation of dividend policy again is not difficult. But when internal funds are required for business growth and the shareholders also want dividends in form of current income instead of capital gains later, the CFO has an unviable task for balancing the two opposing demands for fixed amount of funds. The net returns on funds with shareholders in form of dividend and the return on project that can be executed by investing retained earnings have to be compared to arrive at a dividend decision. Another internal factor that plays a big part is the business nature. So if a company, let's say, is engaged in manufacturing business and a steady flow of earnings is assured, a policy of stable and rising dividend is desirable. But if the nature of business is cyclical and future earnings are variable, a conservative dividend policy suits the situation. Even in the business boom, a large portion of net earnings has to be carried forward to take care of taking care of the slack phase that will come. A conservative dividend policy also suits the business units in their early stages of growth when opportunities of profitable projects exist. Another internal factor is availability of funds. Company with high credit ratings, and therefore they get easy access to capital markets, can find it economical fulfill opportunities for remunerative project through finance from capital market in terms of debt. Here the CFO has no compulsion to restrict dividend distribution. On the other hand, if the company is small, new or otherwise risky, or already has a high debt equity ratio, the CFO may find using larger retained earnings for projects on hand profitable than borrowing from outside. This situation therefore limits the dividend distribution power of the CFO. Maturity of a business unit. Normally, newer business units need a major part of earnings for growth through expansion. The rate at which they grow is on increase. Consequently, number of opportunities for investment at an attractive rate of return is greater. Therefore, a conservative dividend policy is called on. As the company grows and reaches a stable growth rate, the CFO can think of declaring large dividends. Since the company has matured, a smaller part of earnings has to be earmarked for investment and larger part for dividend distribution. Another internal factor required at the time of dividend policy is the availability of liquid funds. We normally assume that highly profitable business units with larger reserves have adequate cash for distribution of dividend, because as per rule you have to give dividend in terms of cash and not in kind. This may not be the case always. This is more so when the unit has to hold larger inventories due to longer business cycles or have significant receivables to meet competition. Available cash is often required to meet the debt obligations. Here, the CFO has to balance the requirements of cash today and tomorrow with the cash required to maintain stable dividends. Adequate working capital to sustain business takes priority over declaration of larger dividends. One of the factors behind success of business unit is the ability to retain adequate working capital and maintaining large reserves. Liquidity requirement thus plays a major part in deciding how much dividend can be paid and when it can be paid. Ownership and control. Another internal factor that we need to evaluate or is evaluated at the time of decision on dividend is the ownership and control. So if the company has a small number of shareholders in higher tax bracket, there is hardly any need for regular dividend which adds to the individual income of the shareholders and compel them to pay more tax. Of course, this is not applicable in India, where the dividend income is tax-free up to 10 lakh rupees from this financial year. If the major net earnings are distributed as dividend, it may be necessary to float more equity to fund future expansion programs. The equity issue results in dilution of control of shareholders in smaller company. Hence, these companies follow a very conservative dividend policy with low payout ratio so that the need of outside fund is minimized. Another internal factor that plays a part is debt agreements. Companies with higher debt equity ratio often are forced to enter into debt agreements where lender impose total restriction on distribution of dividends or permit only partial distribution. This restriction allows the creditors to ensure the liquidity of borrower company is not at stake because of use of net earnings to declare dividend. If the business entity has entered into any such type of agreements, then the CFO has to review them before he or she makes any announcement of the dividends to the shareholders. Expansion plan is one of the other factors that looks at while declaring dividends. So business firms often need to plan for expansion or automation of their facilities. If these plans are not for immediate future, it is sound policy to utilize the available surplus fund towards above average dividend. This step significantly improves the firm's lending in the capital market, standing in the capital markets. As and when the funds are required, a firm can enter the capital markets confidently, reaping benefits of high credit standing generally generated by dividends of the earlier years. Stock dividends. Till now, we have only looked at a study of dividends that are distributed to equity shareholders in cash. We therefore provided importance to the fact whether, in addition to net earnings, the business entity also had to have cash reserves or liquidity to enable it to declare dividend. Shares in certain proportions, say for 1 or 2 years. Companies have another option to declare dividend in stocks, or popularly termed as bonus shares. Instead of cash, the firm issues the shares held. There is no cash distribution, so firm's liquidity does not change. Instead, part of its general reserved or retained earnings of the company gets transferred to equity. Now, in issue of stock dividends does not increase in equity holders' cash earnings per se. But if the firm declares the same percentage of cash dividends next year, their cash earnings are expected to increase by 20%. Further, marketability of share is widened as there are more shares floating in the market than before. Third, shareholders have an option to sell additional shares received and thus book capital gains. Creditors to the company actually welcome bonus as issue as the firm's liquidity is nowhere affected in the form of dividend distribution. However, if the company manages its percentage of dividends, larger amount, that is to the extent of bonus share issued, of net earnings now gets allocated for dividends, thereby reducing company's liquidity. The company law provides for precondition for issuing of bonus shares, that is related to availability of sufficient distributable profits, absence of partly paid shares, use of only free reserve or share premium received in cash for capitalization, minimum residual reserve percentages, etc. What are stock splits? So we've looked at stock dividends or bonus shares. Now we look at stock splits. It is observed that issue of stock dividend or bonus share increases the amount of paid up capital and proportionately decreases the amount of free reserve. Now in the case of stock splits, more shares are issued by reducing the par value of the shares so that the total equity amount and the reserves remain unchanged. Now why do people do that? Stock splits results in fall in the market price of the share and increase their marketability at a lesser affordable price. This ensures this you attract more and more investors. When the company wishes to secure fresh equity funds from the market, lower par value of shares and accompanying lower market price makes the job of seeking funds from larger number of investors less difficult. Stock splits also assist merger or acquisition of companies. Instead of one share of 10 rupees after stock split, you can offer 5 shares of 2 rupees during acquisition. Also, lower market price after split attracts more investors and the prices can go up. Companies also reduce the dividend rate by not by split ratio but little less than a percentage, that marginally higher dividend is received by the shareholders. To summarize, retained earnings of the company can either be used to reinvest in new projects that generate further revenues and assure continuous growth, or distributed to the stockholders as dividend. Ideally, a finance manager should determine what rate of earnings the shareholders would receive from dividend distributed to them, and if that rate is higher than the rate of earnings from reinvestment in company's future projects, then it is clear that the available funds can be distributed as dividend. This is also termed as marginal principle of retained earnings. However, when investors put their funds into company's equity stock, they expect to receive returns, usually more than what they would receive from investment in term loans or deposit. Some want this return immediately and at a reasonable fixed rate, and the balance wish long-term gains, usually in the form of appreciation of the market value of their shares. Naturally, there is a class of investors who want both of the above. Shareholders' preference along with the need of funds by the company should be jointly considered by the CFO to determine what part of net earnings to be distributed as dividends. Other factors that influence dividend decisions are the need for informing investors about company's bright prospects, availability of liquid assets, access to the financial market, and income tax considerations. Two economists, Miller and Modigliani, have propagated that the market value of the company depends on its earning power, and whether these earnings are from the retained earnings or reinvestment or distributed to shareholder in the form of dividend, it has no relationship with the firm's market value of shares. On the other hand, Professor James Walter argues the choice of dividend policies almost always affects the value of enterprise. Second, very popular model explicitly relating the market value of the firm to the dividend policy was developed by Myer and Gordon. One more premise is that what matter is not the actual dividend amount but the difference between what was expected and actual dividend declared. This was explained by John Muth in his paper called Rational Expectation and the Theory of Price Movement. company's dividend policy considers external factors and internal factors. Chief one among being the what is the state of economy, access to capital market, legal constraints, corporate tax, firm's need of funds, debt agreements, availability of liquid funds, and so on and so forth. With this, we come to end of this session. Thank you.